There's one other thing I wanted to say before I begin, and that is, I had a student who passed away this week. He was 31 years old, father of three, and he had been sick for a while. And one thing that I'll say is that there's two parts of preparing a shiur. One part is when you are collecting the information, and the other part when you process the information. And during both parts, I think this was in the back of my mind. You can decide afterwards if it actually came out in any way, because I know how it did, but that's... this student was somebody who studied with me a number of years ago in the university, and later on his brother studied and his sister studied. But he was from a family, I believe his father originally was born in Morocco, but was raised in Israel. So he was one of the Israeli community that lived in L.A., and there is really a quite large Israeli community there. I suspect there are more Israelis in L.A. than most cities in Israel. But if L.A. were a city in Israel in terms of Israeli population, it would probably be the fourth or fifth largest city, just something to think about. And Adam got sick with a rare form of cancer, and they said the only chance that he had to survive would have been by having a bone marrow transplant. In the whole donor registry, there was nobody that matched, and his family, even though it wasn't clear that even if he gets the transplant that it would work, but they organized probably, again, I don't want to exaggerate, but from what I understood, the largest personal drive in terms of adding people to the registry, especially in terms of adding people who are quote-unquote minorities, because that was just not within the culture to a very large extent. And they ended up finding matches, a first, a second, a third, a fourth, a sixth, for people. The eighth match was him, and it was on the eighth day of Hanukkah. And, that sort of gave hope. Since then, I believe another three or four, I think they were up to 11 matches, but the professionals said that they anticipate 150 lives being saved by the amount of people that they brought in. But I began to get some negative feelings in the last couple of weeks. But as soon as I heard about this, and I heard they were looking for a donor, so over here as well, I had helped organize. And at the end, there was just so much care. And what's interesting in the community in LA, the Israelis, most of them are not religious, but he got them to keep Shabbat, and he got them to go to challah bakes, and he got them to do all kinds of things. And, so as I said, around 2 weeks ago, I saw that there was this note going out, mass calling people to keep this Shabbat and next Shabbat. So I realized if that's the case, then obviously something's, not. So I called up his best friend, who was also somebody who's a student of mine, and I sent a message to his wife, and his wife answered in the most dignified way, and she said something to the effect that the disease has ravaged his entire body, and we're looking for a Purim miracle, while his best friend said the doctors have given up and thrown in the towel and no longer treating him. So that was the two different messages that I had. So that was going into Purim, getting these responses, and as I said, he passed away on must have been on Monday night. He passed away. So he had the transplant, and at the end there was So anyway, so his name was Adam Moshe. They added Chaim. Adam Moshe Chaim. So the learning should be in his memory as well. So let's begin. Vayamod Moshe b'shar hamachane, vayomer mila Hashem elei. So we skipped all the exciting parts. The exciting part is sin. We like sin, or at least we have an interesting relationship with sin. There's a certain attraction, we'll put it that way. So we're skipping that. So the sin took place. Immediately when the sin takes place, God informs Moshe. And the opening offer that Moshe has, there is an offer on the table. The opening offer that he has is that God says, I will wipe out the Jewish people. And I want to make this contractual. And God says, I will continue through you. And the reason for saying this is that there is a covenant. And the covenant is between God and the Jewish people. But God didn't say which Jewish people. And one of the tragedies in history is that all kinds of Jewish people have opted out of that contractual obligation and have determined for themselves, I'm no longer a part of this. I don't feel myself a part of this. And now the question is, how does God respond when an individual says, I'm no longer a part, I no longer have contractual obligation within this relationship? Does God say, that's it, I've broken the thing with the whole Jewish people? Or can God say, no, there are still a portion of the Jewish people who are still involved? So over here, God does this or says this in the most extreme way and says to Moshe that I will make you into a great nation. And that still keeps the covenant with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. By the way, if you notice, when Moshe makes his counter-argument, he says two things. One part of his counter-argument is that what will the Egyptians say? This is going to be a Chilul Hashem. What are the Goyim going to say? That's his response. It's such an interesting response. His second response is, but you have a contractual obligation. Why did he use that as his first and only response? Because God already basically intimated, I can keep my contractual obligation. Excuse me? Yeah, without all of these people. I mean, that's exactly the point. And that's why Moshe has to use the Chilul Hashem aspect as his first and primary argument. But still he's saying, come on, that's not really the obligation. It's really with the entire people. How can you just do this with me? And then it says, Vayinachem Hashem, right? God then, I guess the word is regrets or somehow anthropomorphic regret of what he had intended to the people. I'm not sure, I used to be sure, I'm not sure right now if God communicates that part to Moshe or doesn't. Because that says what God feels, I'm just not sure if that's actually communicated. So let's leave that. Moshe comes down, he bumps into Yoshua, what's going on? Yoshua the general, here are sounds of war, it's not sounds of war, it's not sounds of, what is it? There's a party going on, and that's not a good thing. And Moshe then comes down, and luchot are broken, and let's now begin. I saw a beautiful interpretation why Moshe breaks the luchot. God says, I'm going to make a nation out of you, because Moshe's the only one who didn't sin. So Moshe sins also. Okay, now what are you going to do? The only thing I don't like about this is I think it's quite Sabbatean, and I'm not convinced that Moshe sinning, that he shouldn't be better than anybody else, is necessarily convincing. Source number one, and now Moshe comes. Vayod Moshe b'shar machaneh v'yomer mila shemilai. Which, when we read this by itself, so how do we read it? You know, who is still with God, or who is with God, come and join me. But I'm going to say, no, who is still with God? And I'm going to go back to this issue of the covenant. Who is still involved in the covenant? Who still accepts the relationship that we have with God? Mila Hashem Eli. V'yasfu elav kol b'nei Levi. And the ones who join him are the tribe of Levi.
Does this do like a really strong dichotomy with the people who had done sin and the people who had not? Or is it possible that some of the people who had sinned then turned around and said, what have I done, and went and joined him?
I'm not sure. On the one hand, we hear that the amount of people killed will be 3,000. On the other hand, we hear that when it says, you know, Aaron goes into stalling tactics. There's two times that he stalls. One is he says, okay, sure, go home and tell your wives to give all of their jewelry. So I would have expected that three husbands will come back, beat it up, and said this isn't working. But that's not what it says. It says, well, they take all the jewelry out of their ears. Which I guess the conclusion of this is that men should wear earrings and not take them out. I guess that's the obvious conclusion. But the men gave the jewelry. But it says they're kol ha'am. So I always found that interesting. Kol ha'am, so does that mean that everyone was involved in the nation? Listen, there are levels or gradations to the sin. Donations, standing aside watching, protesting, actually worshiping. So to answer your question, I have no idea. I do know at the end 3,000 are killed, so does that mean those are actual worshippers? When it says everyone gives, does everyone really mean everyone, or does it mean a lot? So I'm leaving that question open. The tribe of Levi comes over. Do they come over because they're tzaddikim? Do they come over because this is Moshe's, these are his boys. Vayomer lahem, Moshe says to them, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, which is interesting because we did not hear that instruction. This is what God said. Simu ish harbo al yericho, let a person place their sword on their thigh. Ivru vishuvu, and go back and forth, mishar lishar, from one entry to the other, b'machaneh, v'hirgu ish et achiv, a person should kill his brother, v'ish et re'ehu, and a person should kill his neighbor, v'ishe krovo, and the person who's close to him. I do want to stress over here that there's something which is interesting that we may not have noticed or we may not have cared about. It could have called these people something else. It could have said, kill the sinners. It could have said, kill these terrible Belial, the people who no longer believe in God, right? Kill the idolaters. There's many other terms that could have been used. So I find it fascinating. Ishet achiv re'eo krovo. No, one level of that is the human level, where the person now has to go and put in a position of killing their own brother, neighbor, friend. On the other hand, it's coming from God's perspective, still calling it those terms. So that's what becomes very interesting. V'yaseo b'nei Levi kedvar Moshe. You also notice that could have been kedvar Hashem. V'yaseo kedvar Moshe. They do as they were instructed. V'yipol min ha'am b'yomahu kishloshet alafei ish. And around 3,000 die. V'yomah Moshe mil'u yedchem hayom l'Hashem. I will take volunteers to translate that. Vayomer Moshe, mil'u yedchem hayom l'Hashem. Fill your hands up today for God. Ki ish bivno uva'achiv. Ki over here means ki ish bivno uva'achiv. Yes, so this is a little awkward. With one's children and brothers. Ulateta lechem hayom bracha. Give you by this a blessing. So, we found this awkward, and let's read the Targum. Onkelus writes, "V'amar Moshe kirvu yidchon yom adin." Moshe says the word milu. He has kirvu yom adin korbana. That on this day, with your hands, you either will or have brought a korban kadam Hashem in front of God. Aregvar bivrei uva achoye will itay alechon yom adin brachan. So over here, he sees the killing over here as some kind of a korban which is taking place, which is quite interesting. The Targum Yonatan will go straight to number 4, the Keter Yonatan. V'yom Moshe hikrivu korbanchem al shvichot dam asher biyedchem. He's saying, it's not that the killing was a korban, it's that you now need to bring a korban because of the killing that you've done. You just now killed people, you need now atonement, which itself is very interesting because a moment ago they were told to do it. Why would you need atonement why would you need atonement when you do something which you were commanded to do, unless this is a very strong point? You're commanded to kill, and don't think that that's a very simple thing to be commanded to kill. And even those who kill, even if they're commanded and it's the right thing to do, there's still this level of atonement which needs to take place. As I said, that comment by the Yonatan, or the Pseudo-Yonatan, is quite interesting. Rashi, in source 5, yes, and neither of them are Yonatan. The Targum Yonatan is a Targum from Eretz Yisrael, which someone who made a mistake along the way, and it said Tuf Yud, they thought Targum Yonatan, but it was really Targum Yerushalmi. And total mistake. The Targum Yonatan, a Navi, is Yonatan. The Keter Yonatan is a translation of the Targum Yonatan into Hebrew. So it's very funny. The Yonatan is translation from Hebrew into Aramaic, and the Keter Yonatan is a translation back into Hebrew. It's pretty good. It's not exact, but it's pretty good. Rashi milu yedchem, atem ahorgim otam, bidvar zeh, titchanchu liyot kohanim limakom. So Rashi understands is that by virtue of having killed them, you have, I'm going to explain Rashi in a broad way, by virtue of having killed them, you therefore have brought about atonement for the Jewish people, because the Jewish people had done this terrible sin. Now that you've brought about atonement, well, who brings about atonement? A Kohen. So therefore, by killing these people, you just now became a Kohen. That's what Rashi says again. Atem harogim otam bidvar zeh titchanchu liyot kohanim l'makom. That by doing this killing, you now have become Kohanim. Look at source number 10. This is the exact same thing as Pinchas. But before we get to 10, the Rashbam in source 6, Hayom chinchu kol yad v'yad shalachem bir korban l'Hashem, shri ish bivno v'achiv shalachtem yedechem l'shamayim. That you were prepared to go about and to do this korban, you therefore became Kohanim. So correct. So the question always comes up with Pinchas and why Pinchas was not a Kohen, right? His father was a Kohen, his grandfather was a Kohen, and so on. So there were various answers given. One answer given is because Pinchas will one day kill somebody. So if he's a Kohen and he kills somebody, then he loses the status of being a Kohen, so he can't become a Kohen until after he killed somebody. That's all very nice, except for one particular problem. We see over here that the people who were involved in the killing are the ones who become Kohen. And by the way, it is also an assumption over here that those in Shevet Levi, it's not that they all became Kohanim. Let's be careful about this. Some became Kohanim and some became Levi, but are we saying that the ones who were leading the killing over here are actually Aaron himself? Is this Nadav Avihu? Who's going about and doing the killing over here? Itamar? I mean, who's doing the killing? But it sounds more like, so that's what's interesting about the commentaries of Rashi and the Rashbam. They thereby became Kohanim on this day. That's great, except that this is Shevet Levi and they didn't all become Kohanim on this day, but the argument, therefore, is much better in terms of Pinchas. Pinchas goes and sees the outrage which Zimri does, and all this is in source number 10, so therefore it's a direct parallel. He sees the outrage which Zimri does, he kills Zimri and Cozbi for good measure, and then God says, okay, I'm making you into a Kohen. So over here, it's not only parallel, it's that the parallel is even stronger than over here. And it's almost as if then you have to wonder, is the parallel of Pinchas what brought them to the conclusion, even though I'll say it again, that when we noticed in the Targum, it threw the word Yom HaDin Korbana Kadam Hashem. Is that over here a Korban was brought, which sounds very much as follows. The question is, the Jewish people, have they changed their allegiance from God to the ego? And secondly, what's the implication of doing this? So here, by being commanded to kill the sinners, these people then show that they're actually still dedicated to God. And again, through this is how they end up becoming the leaders in the Kohanim towards God. The other thing that we should pay attention to is a subtext which we're probably not noticing, that part of the service of the Egel, right? Let's put it the other way around. Part of serving the Egel, there was ritual going on. What exactly did it say? They brought olot, they brought shlamim, there were korbanot brought there. Who were the ones who were bringing those korbanot? So for argument's sake, I would say it was the firstborn. And therefore, when do the firstborn forfeit their right to be Kohanim? By virtue of serving the Egel. So now they need to be replaced. Who do they get replaced by? By the ones who get rid of the ones who are actually serving the Egel. So therefore, there is sort of, I don't want to call this replacement theology, because that has completely different implications, but you have a replacement taking place over here, where the ones who are able to show their dedication to God, by virtue of getting rid of those who don't show their dedication of God. So what's the end result here? What's the end result? So we have to go back to the opening offer that God made to Moshe. What was the opening offer? I'm rejecting the Jewish people, or I'm reinterpreting the covenant in the most narrow possible way where only you're involved in it. So now what just now has happened? As a minimum, it's much broader. It's no longer just Moshe. Now it's all of Shevet Levi at least, or still involved. What's going to happen, those in case you don't know how it ends, what's going to happen is God is going to stay with the Jewish people, but what happens along the way is Shevet Levi, who's willing to be actively involved, they then get raised up to become the ones who are going to actually serve, because apparently, and again, it goes back to this strange korban taking place over here, because they were willing to bring this korban, which ironically was the people who were the sinners. So we killed the sinners, and therefore we become worthy to serve God. Yeah. So I think achiv is the feeling of the people involved. I think it's their sense that these are our brothers, and these are, again, I don't take it in a literal sense at all. Okay, let's then continue. Yeah. The in source 8, the Datz Academy, Balei Tosfot, he just focuses on a different word. At the very end of Pasuk Kavted, in the first source, is V'yom Moshe Milu Yedchem Hayom LaHashem. It says, at the end, L'teit Aleichem Hayom Bracha. I think we've been understanding the Bracha was becoming the Kohanim. The Datz Akenim goes back and says, you know, this is why Moshe blessed Shevet Levi. It goes back to the bracha that they received, as opposed to the bracha, if you want to call it that, that Yaakov had given Shev at Levi, which is not much of a bracha. So therefore, he is hyper-focusing on the word bracha and says that's the bracha that they will end up getting in Parshat Zota bracha. I want to move over a little bit now. Source number 11 is the continuation now of God's discussion, which is we started in saying, what was God's opening line? The opening line was, I'm getting rid of Klal Yisrael, and I'm keeping Moshe. So source 11 is Perek Lamed. Gimel v'yidaber Hashem Moshe, leich alei mizeh, atah va'am asher halita me'eretz Mitzrayim. Of course, when the Jews sin, God calls them your people, which is what some commentators who obviously didn't have children called the Erev Rav. This is your people. You chose to take them out, and so on. So what's the issue? The issue is, are they still God's people? That's the question. Is the covenant still in place? Does God have to keep his side of things after the people broke their side of things? So again, what was Moshe's argument? You have a covenant with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So what does God do here? God is being difficult. You like this? You see how he's being difficult? He's agreeing in terms of substance with Moshe, but his language is he's not completely bought into it, which means he says, these people that you took out, okay, go bring them to the land, which I promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, which means God is agreeing that the covenant is still in play, but there is this hesitation in terms of the language, in terms of the identity of the people, your people. The shalachti lefanecha malach, by the way, this sounds good pretty as of now. The gerashti teknaniya moriva chitiva priziva chiviva yivusi. I'm going to chase out, I'm going to subcontract, bring an angel in, get rid of all of these people. By the way, that's real interesting in as much as what the people wanted was Moshe Ha'ish isn't with us, Moshe the man's not with us, let us get an angel who'll go in front of us to do what? Apparently to chase out all the people that are there. So this is so interesting that the people are asking for something that's going to lead them and chase everything out. So do you realize the irony of God's statement over here is, okay, I'll do what they want. Not with an eagle, but I will do what they're asking for. This is what they want. They want something to lead them. Wonderful. I'll send a malach to lead them for more in this malach. See Sefer Yehoshua. El Eretz Zavad Chalav Udvash. And here is where, you know, the other shoe drops. Ki lo ela bikirbacha. Ki am ksheoravata pen achalcha badarech. And God says, but I won't be in their midst. God is saying, I'll keep my word, I'll keep the covenant, but I'm out of here. Why? Because if I am with them and they sin again, I'm adding that in, then I will swallow them up when they sin, which means they are not on the spiritual level of having me with them. The people heard this terrible news and they started to mourn, which is they understood exactly what this means. They got what they asked for. Yes, they got what they asked for, but they lost what they didn't realize they were going to lose. They mourn. And what does that mean? The people did not leave their jewelry upon them. So pay attention to that because we are going to need to understand that. And after they don't leave their jewelry upon them, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Amoro B'nei Yisrael. Again, there's a lack of commitment on God's part. Yes, you hear this? Atem am kshe oref, rega achad ele b'kercha v'kiliticha, v'ata horid ed yacha me'alecha, v'eda ma'ase lach. So again, this sounds like a repetition. Tell them that they are a stiff-necked people, and if I'm in their midst in 1 second, I can destroy them, and tell them to take off their jewelry upon them, which is very strange, because they just took it off in the last verse, and then I'm going to decide what to do with them, which is also very interesting. And the people took off the jewelry that they had from Chorev. So we have three different verses over here discussing the jewelry. One is that we have, and the people, lo shatu ish edyo alav, they would not leave their jewelry upon them. Secondly, God says, and take it off, but they did take it off, and then it says, and they took it off. So we have three, and again, when we read this, it's not the main part. The main part is God's words. The main part is the threat over here. But the jewelry becomes interesting. Rashi writes in source 12, talking about Pasuk Dalid, when the people took it off, Ish Edyo, Ktarim Shenitnu Lehem Bechorev, Kisha Amru Naseh Benishma, which means Rashi goes straight to the Gemara, Midrash. Rashi understands what we're talking about over here is a spiritual aura, if you will. There is some kind of aura that they all have, which were given by the time they said Naseh Benishma, they got two crowns. And that was lost, and that's what they took off. The difficulty, of course, is going to be, okay, so what happens in the next Pasuk and the next Pasuk? Okay. Pasuk, source 13, the Rashbam, who goes to the more mundane, Edyav, Minei Tachshitin, Lefisha Nagu Avilut. They took off their jewelry because they just now entered into mourning. Because it says that they mourned. They mourned, they took off their jewelry. So it's interesting that Rashi sees this in a spiritual sense, while the Rashbam sees this in a much more down-to-earth sense. Rabbeinu Bachaye, in source 14, and you're right, and that could be why specifically in Yom Kippur, this thing. Source 14, Rabbeinu Bachaye, Vishma Amit Var Haraze, Nirali Kisro, Kiblu Aleim, Mini Tsa'ar Mida Keneged Mida, that they accepted upon themselves, again, this mourning, this pain. Originally they had crowns on their heads. And now that they heard that the Shechina is leaving them, so the Simcha left them. And therefore they mourn, and he continues along the same way. So again, he's saying that once God removed this Shechina, then they took off this, again, it sounds like the jewelry, Shekhen Matzino HaKatuv, Shem Shil, Saluka Shechina, Liv Shatat HaBeged. And he goes on to try to prove the point. What's more interesting to me in this Rabbeinu Bachaye is not what he says, but what he doesn't say, but you don't know why that's interesting yet. Let's continue. The Baal HaTurim in source 15 will quote the Gemara in source 16, so we'll just look at the Gemara. The Gemara, we blame God. Moshe, when he describes one of the places they stop, it's called Dizahav. So the Gemara says, Dibei Rabyane Amra Mehacha B'Dizahav, Mai B'Dizahav, Amra Dibei Rabyane, Kacha Mar Moshe, V'nei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbono Sholom. B'Shil Kesef Izahav, Sheish Batalem Yisrael, Adsha Amrudai, Hu Garam Shasu Ata Egel. Why did we make the egel? Because we had too much gold. So Moshe's blaming God. We had too much gold. Where did they get the gold? When they took all the things from the Egyptians. They had too much gold. So therefore, what the Baal HaTurim does is they sense that they had too much gold, and that's this taking off of the jewelry. Look where jewelry has brought us. Look where gold has brought us. It brought us to the sin. So therefore, this is a form of tshuva, a response to what they've done, to realizing that the gold has gotten into this. It's interesting, the Gemara, it's practically Moshe going back to God and saying, well, what do you want? You gave them gold. What do you think with their gold? They'd wear jewelry? Yeah. That's what I would have thought. Correct. And you absolutely hear that coming out of the Gemara, which is really quite interesting. The Kli Yakar, who is always the sensitive reader, and there's a bit of plagiarism here as well. Kli Yakar will take from the Abarbanel, who himself took from others, but whatever. There were different rules a long time ago. Velosha tu ish ad yom alav, yesh makshim. You see right away, yesh makshim. Doesn't say who, yesh makshim. Which is going to be a very good question, which I already asked. Achar shemiatzmam lo shatu ediyam aleihem, mahu ze shechazar v'amar v'tahar rid alecha me'alecha. After they already said that they removed it, why does God have to come and tell them to remove it? V'nir el farish ahayu kan shnei minei adei, or adi. There's two types of, this is two dinam, this is dinam, but there's two different types of jewelry over here, which were referred to in the different psukim. Achar hustam, one was all types of jewelry that people will wear, if it's earrings or nose rings or chokers or whatever else you may want to put on. And the second one was the spiritual one which they took place. So therefore, apparently, what he's trying to tell us is, they themselves took off the jewelry, because there was a bit of embarrassment. Again, the whole gold theme having to do with the golden calf. And then God says, no, that's not enough. You lost something else. you lost the Naseh v'nishma. And by the way, there are midrashim that developed this much more, that they said Naseh v'nishma, but when they asu et ha'egel, they broke the Naseh. The Naaseh was broken by the eagle, asu ha'am asher, asu et ha'egel. So the Naaseh was broken, so they definitely lost the crown of Naaseh. So why should they lose the other crown? So maybe it's a pair. Maybe they go together. Just note, when they got the crowns, it says that 600,000 gave them. When they removed it, it says 1,200 machle, 120,000 angels of Chabalah removed them. So okay, they got them as a set, but they got removed separately. But maybe that's because the Na'aseh and the Nishma were not the same. Na'aseh was broken, but now they had to lose the other as well. And maybe someone understood that. So let me continue then. Still in 17, still in the Klei Yakar. Upapama Rishon Kishamu Adavar Azesh Sha'amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Kilo Lebikir Bachav Rehim Kiminudim L'Shamayim Al Kain V'Tablu V'Lo Shatu Ish Adyav, which means that they took off the jewelry, skipping towards the bottom. Avalotan Shteik Tarim Shakilu Mechorev Lo Parku. They didn't take off those two. And again, remember there's a subtext that those two crowns they got are related to Naseh V'Nishma. Why would they not take it off? Because if they take it off, it's as if now we're denying Naaseh v'nishma. So listen to the way the Klei Yakar develops it. Lo perku ki haya nirah lahem ki prikat ol haTorah ki il amru ein lanu chelik b'Torah ubikitra. It's as if we have no connection with God, with Torah, with the crowns any longer. Okay, nimar lahem shenit. Therefore, God said, "Vatahorid edcha me'alecha." And that's what they then lost when they obeyed God, and therefore they lost the spiritual sense. So what's interesting about the Klei Yakar is the breaking this into two different aspects. The Datzkenim goes in a very similar way. Datzken Balei Tosfot in 18. Tema, Shrekvar Nema Veloshatu Ishadiyavilov, and again realize that that's Tainim is much earlier. That they originally only thought that it would be a temporary thing. Okay, it's inappropriate today to wear the jewelry for 7 days. It's inappropriate today. By the way, now you realize the Balei Tosfot, this is quite consistent. That this is something which is inappropriate. Visvarin, but they thought, Lahaksiram La'achamikan, that they would put him back. So he says, no, you're not putting that back. So therefore, they took it off by themselves, thinking it was temporary, and God is saying, no, this is not temporary. Something has been broken, something has been lost. Rav Yosef Kra, not to be confused with Rav Yosef Karo, because that would be quite a trick for the Balei Tosfos to be quoting Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Kra, Pirish, Velosha to Ish Edyav, Alav, Hein Bigadim Chamudim Vinaim Shelovshu Bishat Matan Torah. Kidichsiv, Vayichbisu Simlotam, Aval, Hored Edcha, Hein Haktarim Shenitnu Lahem Bishasha Amunase Vinishma, Uperkul Tamalche Chabalah Bishasha Avdu Laegel. So he says, no, the crowns were removed by the angels. So what are they still wearing? They're wearing their beautiful clothes that they wore to Har Sinai. That itself is interesting. I mean, a couple days have gone by, right? 40 days have gone by, but they're wearing their special Har Sinai clothing in preparation, A, for the Aseret HaDibrot as spoken by God, and in preparation for Moshe to come down with the Luchot. So they're wearing their nice Har Sinai clothing, and that special, you want to call it Yom Tov clothing, is what's removed, so he takes this into the realm of clothing. There's a third opinion at the very end that has to do with weapons, which we're not going to go to, but that is found in the Midrash. So I want to go back and look now at source 19, which is Perek Kaf Dalet, which refers to these, I will say the preparations, but this is right before Moshe goes up. There's something over here, which again we'll see some of the commentaries, which will take us back to where we're up to. V'yikach Sefer HaBrit, v'yikra ba'ozne ha'am. Moshe takes the Sefer HaBrit. We've seen in the past there's at least three different interpretations what the Sefer HaBrit is. V'yomer kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh v'nishma. And they say everything that God said, we will na'aseh, we will do, and we will hear. V'yikach Moshe et adam. Moshe took the blood. Yizrok al ha'am, and he threw it on the people. Vayomi nidam habrit asher karat lo imachem, it's called al kol hadrim eile. That this symbolizes the keeping of the of this covenant, karat, the brit. There's a brit which is called, it's sefer habrit, karat. There's a brit, there's a covenant which is taking place over here. But do notice there is this element of blood over here within this covenant taking place. The simple reading would seem to indicate that this blood was thrown upon the people. Look at the Targum. Unisev Moshe, 21. Unisev Moshe yaddam v'zarak al midbacha l'kapara al amah. That the blood was actually thrown on the Mizbeach. So Al Ha'am is for the Am. In order to create some kind of atonement, this blood that Moshe took, it's a korban. So what do you do with the blood? You sprinkle it on the Mizbeach. So Targum Yonkelos understood over here, the blood was sprinkled on the Mizbeach. In 22, again, the Targum Yonatan in Hebrew, V'yikach Moshe t'chatzi adam shemizrakot v'yizruk ala Mizbeach l'kaper ala Am. V'yomar hinei zedam habrit. So, shekorat Hashem imachem, I'll call him Eila. So it's interesting that over here, thrown on the people, no, that's on the Mizbeach. Ibn Ezra is going to start our problem, and he'll say something, and the same idea I think we'll find from a number of different people, but let's take a look. V'ikaf Moshe t'dam sheya ba'aganot, which was in the little containers, v'yizrok ala am, kamo v'yaz al Aaron v'al begadav, just like when Aaron becomes a Kohen, he has blood sprinkled on him, the people become Am Kodesh, so they have the blood sprinkled upon them. Ubo hayta kedushato. Source 23. Visham afershenu. And if you want to take a look there, I'll explain the whole idea much more than Ben Ezra says, and we're not pursuing that more. Vacherim amru ki ala am ba'ad ha'am. What does it mean? It was for the people, which, by the way, could go back to the Mizbeach idea. Ukumo v'chaper ala am. So, and then I believe that that is, he's really citing now what we saw in Onkelos, that he threw it on the Mizbeach for the people. V'hagon, it's like the Rav Sadia, V'hagon Amar, again, when the Balei Tos, it's not the, this is not the Vilna Gaon, and that was not Rav Yosef Kara, okay? Over here, when the Ibn Ezra quotes the Gaon, it is Rav Sadia Gaon, V'hagon Amar, ki ze remez shedimchem mutar kedam hazeh, im lo tishmeru habrit. And then he adds, v'zed derech drash. That's a very chilling drash. What he says over here is, what is the purpose of the blood to indicate there's a covenant? So what is a covenant? A covenant is a two-sided agreement. So a two-sided, right? There's two sides to a contract. So the two sides to the contract here are, if you keep your side of the deal, so I mean, God will lead us to come to the land of Israel, God be with us and all this. And if you don't, the sprinkling of the blood is to I want you to see, I want you to visualize, I want you to experience what's going to happen if you don't keep your side. And what does it say? Blood will be spilled. So that's a very frightening interpretation, but that's what the Ibn Ezra just now said. But he said at least, he said derech drash. In the Hadr Zakein, which also comes from the Tosfot school, go down, hinei dam habrit, go down a little bit. V'nichnasu Yisrael l'kabalat ha'Torah b'milah v'tfilah, and so on, and that's the blood over here. But let's go down towards underline. Kedei la'harot lehem she'in lo yikamu t'Torah yiparah mehem badam. If you don't keep the Torah, you're going to pay for it with your blood. So as I said, that is a little scary. And now Rabbeinu Bachaye. Remember I told you before that I was more intrigued what Rabbeinu Bachaye didn't say? And you didn't even pay attention to that? Source 25 now. Rabbeinu Bachaye. He writes, V'yikach Moshe hadam v'yizrok al ha'am. Moshe takes the blood and he throws in the people. Hazah hadam aleihim. He sprinkled the blood upon them. Kedei shekansu bebrit am hakadosh im hakadosh baruch hu bedam, that they can enter into covenant with God with blood. Voto ketem hadam sha'al bigdeihim kara hakatuv adei. That was adei, good adei, which we always take as jewelry, but adei can also come from the word witness. The fisha haya. Edei lahem v'kavod gadol. This was the sign that they were involved in a covenant with God. So this is like really like totally crazy. So what did Rabbeinu Chai just now? I mean, did we all understand what he said? He said that the blood on their clothing is the witness to the covenant, which they had. The alkein kishachatu bechet, kishachatu be'egel, when they sinned with the egel, the avru al habrit, and they broke the covenant. Amar lahem harid ed yacha me'alecha, take off the clothing. Now we already saw a hint at this before. Oh, this is the nice clothing, the Yom Tov clothing. So you all understood the Yom Tov clothing was designer. Was designer clothing? Yes. Which designer? We don't care, right? So this was, and what Rabbeinu Bachai is saying, that the clothing or the witness, the testimony, is the blood on the clothing, which is standing there as a warning. And then God says, take it off. Now when Chlomer Kishiyasiru Mealeim Otam Habgadim, Shayu Adai Lahim, that these things were the witnesses. Shayu Adi Lahim. That the clothing which was a sign, a testimony of the covenant between God and the Jewish people. And why would God make a covenant with Dam? Ramaz lahem imatem mekaimim et haTorah mutav. To indicate if you keep the Torah, that's good. The imlav hareini matir damkem dimchem lekaret ulamita. Ze katuv Rabbeinu Chananel. So I just wanted to point out that here we have another source for this, Rabbeinu Chananel, who, by the way, v'chein pirish Rashi, hoya mize al bigdeyim min hadam. Again, Rashi doesn't follow all the way through. His rak hadam al mizbeach lechaper la'am. Right, that's the way that Unculus took this. If you look at the Riva, again, one of the Balei Tosfot, Harim Alei Me'alecha, Ram Mikutzi Zal, so here we have another authority, Pirish Adei, Hu Dam Habrit Shayal B'deim, Domi Kamoshi Kamu Kol Mitzvot HaTorah, V'chamim B'hem, Hariduhu Me'atzmam Kishetachatu Ve'egil, Kamoshi Nema, V'lo Shatu Ish Ediyav Aleim, V'achshav Tziva Makom, L'kulam Shirdu. So he has the two stages. Some of the wise people understood they need to take it off, and then God commands everyone else, L'fisha Abru Alanochi, Ba'olo Yelacha. The Yesh Rishim Lo Shatu Ayinu Yisrael Shechatu Ve'egel V'moshe Lo Haridu Me'alav L'fisha Lo Chata V'malo Ma'akom Gam Ata Harid Ed Yecha Me'alecha V'bnei Chlish Radan Shal Yisrael. That, by the way, Moshe, your part, which is interesting. You're, okay, this means Moshe won, by the way. You're part of the people. So you also take, you also lose it. Which, and 1 second, and this goes against the Gemara. And this goes against the Gemara, right? Because the Gemara says that the light that Moshe has was from the cumulative crowns of everyone else. Everyone else lost their crowns, but Moshe got the crowns of everybody. And Moshe had so many crowns that that's the glow of Moshe. So I said that would seem to be, if not the Gemara, then it's certainly where the Tosfot understood the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. So I want to pause for a second and try to understand what went on over here. I'll just mention maybe one more thing, which we won't look at. You can look at later in your own time, Source 28, which is Rav Hirsch, who tries to convince himself. I mean, he didn't convince me, so, but I don't know if he's convinced. He even says, "Va'ola aladat hashara noezet," right? So I don't think he really believes it either. And he's saying what they took off was their tefillin. He does not bother saying if it was only the men or the women also wore the tefillin. He said it was tefillin. They were all wearing tefillin. Because what else could it possibly be? It was tefillin. So he tries to convince all of us of this, and you can try. It does on a certain level, but the radiation was more Gemara, not Pshat. And he's saying Pshat. He won't say Pshat. Is that they got tefillin back in Perek Yud Gimel, which one could argue. Perek Yud Gimel, they receive tefillin when they leave Egypt, and therefore they're wearing the tefillin. And God says, that's it. If you don't act like Jews, how can you wear tefillin? Take off your tefillin. As I said, that's what Hirsch tries to argue. Yisroel shechata Yisraelu. So what does that mean? Yisroel shechata Yisraelu means, that's actually based upon a pasuk in Yeshua, which says, chata Yisrael, Israel has sinned. The real pshat over there is one person sinned, Achan sinned, but everyone, it's as if everyone sinned, because there's communal responsibility. What the Gemara does with this is it says, Yisrael, afa pi shechata Yisraelu. That means that you still have full responsibility. See, there's two things. One is privilege and the other is responsibility. So, it could be you lose privileges. You just think about American law for a second. One of the basic freedoms in America is freedom of movement. Commit a felony, get caught, you may find yourself in prison, and you've just lost your freedom of movement. But how? I have freedom of movement. No. You've lost that privilege. A Jew as well can lose privileges of being a Jew. No, but certain people lose privileges. You lose privileges. That's very important. Yisrael, Ava Bishachak Yisrael means that you always have responsibilities. Now, let's stop a second. Where did we begin today and where did we end up? And we didn't go in order, so that's why it could be a little bit confusing. We began with God saying, I am rejecting Klal Yisrael, or I am reinterpreting the covenant in the most narrow way, which means all these other people are no longer part of the covenant. That's it. They're not going to Israel. I'm not keeping my word with them. I'm keeping my word. How is God still keeping his word? He's keeping with Moshe. Moshe's response is, that's a Chil Hashem. What's his next response? But you have a covenant. We all realize that the second argument is not the best argument, because that's what's on the table right now. How do I understand this? And the offer is, I'm going to make this just with Moshe. Moshe chooses to try to broaden the base of who are on the right side when he calls out, Mila Hashem Eli. We may not realize at that moment how important that is. Mila Hashem Eli is now going to be who is still part of this and who is still part of God, who is still part of this covenant. Okay, all of Shevet Levi come. So what do they then do? So at the time that it happens, and still today, it's something which on one hand is really horrific, asking people to commit, I wouldn't call it murder, but to go and to become the judge and the jury and to go and to kill the people, kill the sinners, presumably those who actually worshipped the golden calf actively. And these people are sinners and they're called upon to spill their blood. I'm now going to point out that by spilling their blood, something else happened as well. What happened? The statement which is taking place here is that they're still part of the covenant, because they just got punished for what they've done. Which means when a covenant is over, you can just walk away. The spilling of the blood goes all the way back to the way the covenant took place from the very beginning. And I know that this whole thing of blood and spilling is really very... I told you, blood was in my head all week. But this whole thing about blood is really disturbing. But realize there is a flip side to this, which is actually quite positive. And the flip side, which is positive, is saying, no, these people are going to be punished by spilling their blood. That's the covenant. That means they're still part of the covenant. But no, it's still part of the covenant which was made back in Perek Kav Dalet, where the blood was sprinkled on them, saying, if you don't keep this, your blood will be spilled. So now their blood is spilled. So what does that mean? That means that they are still a part of the covenant. On the other hand, God says, okay, the clothing with all the blood, take this off. You know, take this off. And it could be, this is not necessary anymore, because now there is, unfortunately, new blood which has been spilled. But again, all that I'm pointing out right now is that this statement of Rabbeinu Bechaye, which now we realize goes much further back, and it's not just his statement. There's a whole bunch of Rishonim who bring this, that the clothing of the witness, that was really the statement that God is with us. But that's a double-edged sword. That is saying God is watching, and that's saying there are repercussions for sin. And even though God initially says, that's it, it's over, Moshe refuses to accept this. Moshe says, no, there are repercussions for sin. Those who sinned will be killed. And again, we can ask, why is this done in such a horrific way with the blood being spilled and so on? Each person take their sword and... No, this is exactly what is necessary for this particular juncture to take place. What happens afterwards is the Jewish people have lost something. As I said, the great irony, as far as I'm concerned, is that they ask for something to go in front of them, and God says, fine, the Malach will go in front of you. By the way, at the end, God backs up on that. And at the end, God, and that's really the important. Yeshua the mouth comes, but it's quite important, because as we continue, there's actually a couple of things or a couple of words that we need to pay attention to. Perek Lamed Gimel. Okay, let me just go in order here. Moshe says, "Vayimi macharat." After all the killing, "Vayomer Moshe la'am, atemchat atemchat gdola." You've done a great sin. Maybe I can still bring about atonement. Vayomer Hashem and Moshe, this is all the way Lamed Gimel Yud Zayin, Gam et Devar Hazeh Asher Dibarte Eseh, Kimatzata Chin Be'enai Be'edacha B'Shem, and so on. Over here, along the way, Moshe somehow, afterwards, ends up getting more and more forgiveness from God till the point that God agrees to be within their midst as well. So therefore, the process over here, which is interesting, the tshuva process is an ongoing process, although Moshe initially absolutely refuses to take God's offer.